First, I'll introduce myself. I'm Jerry Diamond, and I am a pastor. I'm involved in a Christian community known as the Shalom Community in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And this is Nancy, my wife. And what I'm going to do here is present maybe just a few thoughts about community. And I hope to accomplish that in 20 or 30 minutes and then leave 20 or 30 minutes or more to talk about it. This is my third week here at Holden, and I noticed that I was the first week very uptight about the sessions, and we're going to fill an hour with something meaningful, and if you all came here for an hour, and if you all get your money's worth or whatever that amounts to, and now I'm getting relaxed to the point where I really almost would relish sitting with you in a corporate communal agreed upon silence for 30 minutes. That would not be a bad use of 30 minutes. Thomas Merton, a famous Cistercian monk, was on his way to the Far East, and he stopped at another kind of monastery or convent in California. And there were a group of people there who met him, and they walked up and said, "Father Merton, we'd like to have you say a few words to us about prayer." And his answer to them was, "Nothing that I could say would be all that important." Here's a Cistercian monk who's devoted 27 years of his life to prayer, and his answer was, "Nothing that I could say would be all that important." And to give you some idea what he meant was that he went on to say something like this: "I believe that what you want to do is pray. Well, then, go pray." You don't start out by reading a couple little books about prayer, or start out with some little prayers and see if we can work ourselves up to some really good ones, or you just go start. And then he said that's the whole rule for prayer in the Benedictine order. And that was the rule that St. Benedict laid down: if anyone would pray, let them go and pray. That's it. That's the whole rule. Well, that's about the way I feel about community. That nothing that I can say would be all that important. If you want community, just go start. But I don't know. I'm going to still try to grind out about 15 or 20 minutes about it. Maybe before I do say anything about it, let me ask a question. I mean, what do you think of when you hear the word community? Any responses that you might have to that word?
Communion.
Communion, okay, another one.
Support.
Fellowship of people,
all right.
Closeness.
Caring.
Family team.
That's why I didn't understand.
Relating,
okay.
Family.
Interdependent.
Oh, good. Those are really good words about community. I think community was a fad word for a long time, and when someone used the word community, they might immediately conjure up in our minds communal living. And no one said that one had to live communally to be in community, and that's true. Right now, Nancy and I do not live in a communal household. We did for a couple of years, but we don't see that as a essential, it is of the essence of being in community. It's an accidental thing. Excuse me. It has its advantages, but it's not of the essence. let me say a couple of other things then about what I think when I think of the word community. First of all, it's not what we expect. I don't care what you expect. If you wanted to become a part of a community, it will not be what you expected. I know that before we moved to Kalamazoo 8 years ago and had the idea of a Christian community, I had all kinds of fantasies in my mind of what it would look like. It doesn't look at all like that. And I don't think that we can push some kind of structure or something for community. And the reason is that, as I would use the word community, it is not a human construct. It's not something that you sit down and lay it all out and say, now let's just fill this all in with people and make it look like that. It just doesn't work that way. Dietrich Bonhoeffer has written a nice little book called Life Together, and if you haven't read it, it's worth reading. It isn't hard to read, but it's not an easy book. But he points out in that book, too, that our ideas of what community is just are shattered when we really kind of move into what God gives us in the way of community. The word community is used in a lot of ways, and I usually, when I'm thinking or writing something down about Christian community, I usually spell the word with a capital C, because I live in a community, which is almost like synonymous with neighborhood. And I'm not sure a neighborhood is a community at all. And there are a lot of other things, other constructs of groups of people that we might think of as community, and they can get fairly bizarre. For example, I think some people will have a sense of community that goes even into imaginary people. I know people that I have, from the way they talk, I get the feeling that they have a sense of community with the characters on a soap opera in the afternoon. And they really do. They almost relate to those folks as if they were real live people. Or there are people who feel, in a sense, in community with cartoon characters. You hear people talk about the world community. And I feel love towards Vietnamese or whatever, you know. Now, that may be an aspect of community. I'm not denying that could certainly be, depending on how deep your own prayer life is, whether that constitutes any sense of community or not. I think that community, as I use the word, is God-given. And when Nancy and I first moved to Kalamazoo, the way we went about establishing what would be essentially be a new church, we said we're not going to go around knocking on doors asking people to join a new church. What we'll do is simply move into Kalamazoo, settle down, become involved in the city in ways that seem natural to us, and doing things that we like to do, and see what happens. And that first year was one of the high points of my life, I think. It was an extremely freeing experience. I had been in a typical ALC parishes, two of them. The last one had been there for 9 years, and I suddenly felt enormously free. I can't hardly explain that to you. In many respects, your pastor in a typical Lutheran church is a kept person, and the further you are in this business of the ministry, the more kept you can become, because there are all kinds of worldly things that conspire to do that. Pension funds, parsonage is provided without cost, not a great salary, but very steady. And so there's that kind of warm, cozy place to be. And we gave that up, but we had a great sense of freedom in that first year. And one of the neat things about moving into the city that way not talking religion to people was that I met people, got to know them, they got to know me for a month, 2 months, before they ever got around to asking, what do you do? And at that point, when we moved to Kalamazoo, we were a so-called tent-making ministry. Does anybody here not know what a tent-making ministry is? You don't know? Well, it's a little phrase that came out of the fact that St. Paul made tents to earn his living, okay? He wasn't paid by the church that he served. So we weren't getting paid by any church. We weren't getting paid by the ALC. We didn't have a congregation. We had to make our own way economically. And the way we did that when we moved to Kalamazoo was that Nancy got a job. She's a physical therapist. And Nancy was the breadwinner in our family. So we did a kind of a role reversal, and incidentally, and this is just an aside, it really didn't cause any problems at all with our children. We thought it might cause problems with our children, but it didn't at all. So when people would meet me and they'd say, what do you do? My stock answer was, I'm a house husband. And the stock response was kind of like, oh, that's interesting. And then very tellingly, they would say, what do you really do? And it was men and women both who would say that. Like being a house husband or a housewife wasn't really doing something. It was like that was no good or something. You must really do something else. That isn't good enough. No, I'm really a house husband. generally, I wouldn't say any more than that. And sometimes they would let it go at that, and sometimes they would push it a little further and say, well, what did you do before you were a house husband? It's like, it's like we can't talk about that because that isn't interesting. So I would say, well, I'm a pastor, a minister, rabbi, a priest, you know, that kind of a person. And, oh, well, where's your church? Well, we don't really, I mean, we don't, it's not any place, you know. I would say it's people, and we meet in my home at 7 o'clock on Sunday evening for corporate worship, you know, and you're welcome to come. And sometimes they would say, well, I'm really interested in community, but I'm not interested in Christian community. I don't like the religious stuff. I'd say, well, that's okay. You know, you're still welcome to come, but it is a Christian community, and our basic premises are fairly simple. We don't ask people to buy into a lot of doctrinal things, but one of the things that is not up for grabs with us is to say saying Jesus is Lord. That's a question that we're struggling with. What does it mean to say Jesus is Lord? And if you're willing to join in and struggle with that one, this is what we're doing. So that's kind of how we got our community going, meeting people that way. But it's God-given, and you can't tell who's going to become a part of it. There's all kinds of people that may become a part of a community, Christian community. And it's a place where differences are celebrated. when I got going with this with the district president in the Michigan district, one of the things I said to him was, I'm not a couple of criteria that I put out, and he bought them. I said, numbers will not be a criteria for success. That is, I'm not going to count whether what we're doing is successful or not based on how many members we have or how many dollars are coming in. That's not it. Also, I don't want to ask people to become Lutherans. Now, that was really, really something different because I don't know that that's how highly that would be thought of in the Lutheran Church, but I said, this is going to be a Christian community within which there will be some Lutherans. But if someone comes and wants to be a part of this community and they're Catholic or they're Baptist or they're whatever, I want to place Christian community ahead of being Lutheran. And lo and behold, the district president said, fine, no problem with that either. As long as there is a congregation of Lutherans within this larger thing, whatever it is that emerges. So it's a place where differences are celebrated, and I really, at that time we started, I really felt it was important. I don't know, I perhaps didn't know why, but that was an important aspect of it to me, and it's proved to be very, very, very important. Now, another aspect of community that I think is that we found out from working with it for several years was that it cannot be nebulous. We, at the beginning, when people began to come and we began to worship together and we began to talk together, everybody was extremely gun-shy of laws, rules, criteria, all that kind of stuff. And they wanted to be free. They didn't want to have, you know, a whole lot of regulations and rules and constitutions and all that kind of stuff. So we thought, that's neat. We'll just be pretty open. And people can, I mean, when the first 2 years when somebody came and said, how do you get to be a member of this group? You know, I mean, they came with the idea of membership. I mean, normally I transfer my letter of membership to another church, or I go to catechetical classes for 10 weeks, and then I become a member. But how do you become a member? And we would just say, well, you just jump in, and after you're here for a month or two or three or six, pretty soon you're with the group and things are rolling along. Well, we found out it didn't work. It was too nebulous. I think community can't be that unstructured. So we had to struggle with what it meant to have some kind of structure which was both, that would give some definition to who we were as a Christian group, but would also allow people to be free and to help people to grow. So structure is important. And I think that Christian community in a large degree is structured by the Word, structured by the Word of God. The mission director of the ALC, whom I think probably never could quite understand what in the world we were doing, the bishop, the district president, he was with it. I mean, he really understood. But I don't think the mission director ever did quite understand. He kept saying to me, well, what's your model? What's your model? You know, the idea of models somehow is in his head. And to me, models meant airplanes that you put together and flew around or something. What's your model? And I kept saying, well, the New Testament is my model. I mean, that's about the best model I can think of, and I don't think he really quite understood that. But I think Christian community is structured by the Word and the New Testament. I don't mean to sound flip about that. We'll talk about that one in a few minutes. Christian community is many things, celebrating together, working together, playing together, and the Eucharist. That was an important thing that gives us, we are shaped by that meal. That's sort of the central, that's central to me in terms of Christian community. Much the way that Dan Erlander's sermon talked about it last night. We come around that table weekly and say, you, there you are. Community is, I wanted to say this at the beginning and I forgot. In a sense, this session tonight is one of a two-part session, and I would much rather have put the other part first. And the other part is solitude. These two disciplines that I said are the yin and yang of Christian growth is solitude and community. And somehow it just seems more natural somehow to talk about solitude first and then community. But it was suggested that we do this one later in the day, because there'd be some staff people who might want to come, and they can't come at 10:45. So keep in mind that there has to be a kind of a yin yang thing with solitude and community. They go together. The reason they go together, I think, and this is important, that one cannot come into a Christian community. In order to find your own identity, I guess is the way to put it. That's a sort of a delicate thing to say or distinction to make. But if a person comes, doesn't know who they are, and expects the community to tell them who they are, that's going to be destructive. In other words, what I'm saying is there has to be a certain kind of maturity to people who become part of a Christian community. Now, it probably works pretty well if a person comes to be a part of a Christian community and is not very mature, doesn't know who they are, but does not expect the community to tell them who they are. But through the growth together, they can begin to search inside themselves. That may work all right, but community is not just there to tell us who we are. I think that that is often what happens in the world. We maybe don't call them communities, but even in our society, which is not a totalitarian society, but a, quote, free society, is in fact very unfree, and we are not, we do not know the extent of our unfreedom, because it's far more subtle than it would be in a totalitarian society. And I think it moves us towards a mass mind, but much more slowly and much more subtly than a totalitarian society. There's great cultural conformity in our society, as we are bombarded day by day by day with propaganda and cliches and advertisements and many, many subtle things that shape us to think of ourselves, to gain our identity from being a part of some group, whether it's the nation, the state, the city, Washington State University football team, or University of Michigan, or the high school, or the college we went to, or the beer we drink, or there's a lot of things in our society constantly agitating our minds, but to give us a sense of belonging to something. And I think, in a sense, Christian community is important, because it strips those illusions away eventually and begins to move us into the pain and the joy that God gives us in being the family of God. That's one reason. The family can be the family of God. It can also be the family of mom and pop and grandparents. There's definitely community there. So let me just, we're 20 minutes into this thing, and I can pull a couple things together here. I'll say something else about community that we've discovered. Community, in a sense, is a true discipline of prayer. And it, in that sense, it goes hand in hand with solitude. It is a discipline of prayer, and I think that one of the things that's possible in a small community is that as you can, and we've done this, we don't do it as much as we should, but we do it, is to maintain some corporate silence together, where there's a sense of one's own identity, but a sense of the corporate identity of a Christian community. And I don't know how many churches you belong to where it would be permissible or comfortable to spend 1 hour, let's say, in agreed upon silence. We do that sometimes on Wednesday nights, or sometimes it's only 15 minutes, but it's very comfortable. And we found now that for some of us at least, it's one of the most strengthening things we can do. In a sense, we communicate the Word of God with one another without words. And I don't know how to explain that. I mean, just all I can do is say it, but it's true.
We also like the same room together. Is that
yeah.
Corporate?
Yes. We'd be corporately together in a room, and it's just well. Until you begin to do that, it's impossible for me to tell you. I mean, it's like, what can I say? It's like if anyone wants to sit in silence, go sit in silence, and do it persistently enough to discover for yourself what happens. Something happens.
But we do it on Good Friday. It's easy to see where something could really come from that. Because we do it Good Friday where, all those are voluntary things. But maybe the people sitting on there just praying. Silence.
That's right. That's a good thing to do. It'd be good for church groups to do that every time they got together. Or in the midst of a hot church council meeting. I mean, if your people were really conditioned that silence was important and things are going really hot, that they could understand that someone could say, and I think what we need here is 20 minutes of corporate silence and prayer and just be silent. I think you'd be amazed at what would happen because God can't really talk to us very well when we're talking so much. It's part of it. Well, that's a part of solitude. Really, it is. And that's part of the, and then I'll talk about this more tomorrow, but that's a part of the terror that we experience. We don't know who we are. I mean, even though we can use the words, I am a child of God and all this kind of stuff, but we don't really, how can I use this, in our guts, know what that is. So we do go for the distractions because they keep us from thinking about that. And the distraction might be a whole lot of church talk, as well as a whole lot of football games or bowling or whatever. Another thing that I will want to mention here is that a Christian community is not a place where everybody just sort of lovey-doveys everybody and hugs, and those are all part of it, and I love the hugging that goes on. In fact, in our community, there's a we don't do the passing of the peace during the liturgy at all because we try that once or twice. You never could pull them back together again. I mean, the hugging goes on, and, it's just a really neat thing. So we put that at the very end. After the benediction, we usually sing Shalom, my friends. Our community is called the Shalom Community, and often we'll end by singing that song, Shalom, my friends, And then people just start getting up and hugging each other and talking. I mean, it's a very natural thing, and often we have coffee and donuts or something, and it just sort of moves into that. And if we did the passing of the peace during the liturgy would be the end of it. Okay, that sort of is a digression. What I started out to say was that a community is not a place where people just scratch each other's backs. And that's human. We'd like to do that. We just like it to all be smooth and love each other and don't find fault with anybody. And ain't so. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. In fact, if it does go that way, nobody grows. I mean, everybody scratches everybody else's back and nobody grows. So what we've found is that what we need to do, in our community at least, is, this is one thing we need to do, we need to have some disciplines that we corporately agree on that are freeing, but that have some substance to them, and be able somehow to in some way call one another to accountability for our responsibility to those disciplines. Now, we have a real hard time with that. I'm not saying that's easy, but I think it was Elton Trueblood made a statement like, there's no integrity when someone leaves a church. I mean, a person can kind of drop out of a church without a whole lot of fuss about it. And he said the reason is that because there's no integrity at the point of entrance. That, you know, the church has a constitution, which I don't think, how many here have read the constitution of your congregation through? Really know what it says? Far out, I can hardly believe it. You guys must be masochists or do that. We don't have a constitution. We have disciplines that we feel that we try to work with, and they are changeable. I mean, we work with them for 6 months. We may get together and talk about, are these disciplines now helping us to grow? And don't give up on them too fast, but then be able to talk to one another and hold one another accountable for those disciplines. I think that communities which are basically phony, I'll just run over this quickly, I've touched on all these points, I think, now, are communities that are nebulous, there's no boundaries, that are imaginary communities, you're into community with your dog, or with all the boys in the armed forces, or a community with Charlie Brown, and all that kind of stuff. That's not community. Or a community that has no discipline at all or lacks integrity. I think the churches I've been in, about all you had to do to join it was, in a sense, say something about believing in the Apostles' Creed and stuff like that, but not too much beyond that. So a community, as I'm thinking of it as a Christian community, frees us in a lot of ways, gives us space to be and to become. It also limits us. And there's really no place for individualism in a community. There's a high place for individuality, but not a cult of individualism. So you give up some of your individualism to be part of a community. It becomes important, no matter what, how great your wishes or desires are, is to expose it to the community for the discernment of the group, and they may discern that this is not something you should do. You risk something, and we're learning a little bit how to do that. And the Spirit, I think, God's Spirit creates community. It's celebrated in the Eucharist. It frees us up to go finally to places we'd rather not go. I think that's what happened with the early community. When they were all huddled in a little room, upper room, before the Spirit had come upon them, they weren't a community. They were just the people who clung to each other out of fear, which is what a lot of people do and sort of call that a community. I think the summary would be, it's formed by God. It's centered in Christ. It's the locus of the Spirit. It's Eucharistic. It's open to all. It has some structure and discipline and accountability. That's the thoughts that came to my mind as I was thinking of our community. And then many other things about what might be a part of a community are accidental. Whether one lives communally in a communal household or not, that's an accidental. It's not a sine qua non. Or, for example, on major decisions in our community, we try to make those by consensus. And do you know what consensus is? Anybody here want to explain that? Everybody knows what consensus is. Don't have to explain it. Okay. I think you can make decisions in other ways, but that's one way we've shown. But that's not an absolute sine qua non of community. Although I think that there are scriptural there's some scriptural mandates for that. If a number of you could agree on anything in prayer, would be granted to you. That's sort of almost talking about consensus. If you get that kind of agreement. Or economic interdependence is, I think, another possibility that Christian community could move toward. Ours, we are not economically interdependent, at least not yet. We may discover that that's a way to live. I'm not too sure yet. I think I'll stop. We got a half an hour now to ask questions.
The family of God, that happens to be the name of our congregation, isn't it? Right? And that is the family that we are, that I was referring to. And the point of it is that, that when you become a member of this family, the family of God Lutheran Church, that it is a caring community that's concerned with the individual. We fellowship together in many different ways, including feasts together. That means that children of that maybe 6 years of age or seven or eight can take communion once the family, the child and the pastor and the family have decided this child is ready, for example. The real true feast where they all come to the table. That's the family and community of which I was thinking of there. Mm-hmm. The second comment that I wanted to make was when you talked about it needs a structure and some kind of a formal responsibility to somebody. I'm thinking of Genesis in Troy, Michigan, for example, as one that did not have any ties and consequently disappeared as a result. That was a community which every 6 months would set goals to do accomplish certain things together, and then what they didn't do, though, was accept responsibility financially and other ways, and that's where they fell apart, because they really had no ties to any other group or acknowledged their salary and so forth. They were willing to let DSMA pay it and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So there are pitfalls also in community which have to be worked out, a little more attachment to something.
Community is not formed necessarily around a cause. And some people have a feeling that they are part of a community because they're engaged in this cause. That's not what it is, I don't think.
What are some of the agreed upon disciplines in your community?
Well, they're discipline of corporate worship. I mean, that's specifically something that we say we put ourselves under the discipline of worshiping together. It's not just a cum si cum sa thing, you know. That was one of the things that bothered me about a lot of churches. You could be an active member in most congregations that I know of if you communed at least once a year and had a contribution of record. I mean, those are the two criteria for membership. And that's non-membership. So corporate discipline, normally together with our community, but, you know, sometimes it'd be with some other community or other church. A discipline of corporate study, and we usually try to have about six categories of study that we would engage in. That would be Old Testament study, New Testament study, a study of the interior life, which that might include bringing outside resources, people to talk. It'd be more or less a study of that kind of thing, and so forth. Study of other communities and what's happening in the Christian world today. We tried a discipline, one of our disciplines, we found it didn't work, and I think we finally have been relieved of it. It was a burden that we couldn't bear, was being pastor to one another. In the normal sense of the word, I'm the pastor of the Shalom community, but in how we look at the Shalom community, each person in that community is a minister as much as I am. And so we try to work out some system by which each person in the community had a pastor, not me necessarily, but somebody in the community would be their pastor. That meant that you were not only had a pastor, but you were a pastor to somebody else in many instances. And if you want to try something tough, that's a tough one. After struggling with that for 2 or 3 years, we finally, I think, have gotten some insight from a Roman Catholic nun who came. She's quite an accomplished spiritual director, deep woman. And she said, what you're trying to do is really impossible. You're trying to be spiritual directors to one another. And first of all, not everybody's called to be a spiritual director. You can't assume that within this community everybody could possibly be a spiritual director. And so she toned us down a little bit on that and said, you know, it's more realistic to have a prayer partner. And, you know, if someone feels a need, and I think from time to time it's important to have a spiritual director who has experience, who knows what it means to be a spiritual director. It's important to have that from time to time. So that was a discipline. We still kind of try out the prayer partner thing, though. A discipline of daily personal Bible reading, devotional Bible reading and prayer and interior life. Discipline surrounding money and all things that we own. We've experimented some with that too, in terms of sharing in the community not only our money but everything, everything that we're willing to share. And then a discipline of outward mission. So is that right? Did I miss any? You weren't listening.
I don't know.
So then when someone says, now, well, I'd like to become a member of the Shalom community, we don't use the word too much, member, but we commit ourselves to the disciplines. And that usually entails 2 months of struggle before we get to the Sunday where we're going to make our recommitments. Often that's, we spend a lot of time before that to really hashing out whether this has been helpful, realistic, where we have failed, why we have failed, shall we try to discipline ourselves once more, you know? And so we're, in a sense, we kind of die and are reborn once a year in that regard. We don't have that, therefore, see, we're real small, but that really kind of eliminates having inactive members, because there's no church council that goes over the records and says, "Oh, this guy hasn't been here for 6 months. Let's put him on the inactive rolls." Each individual takes responsibility for being committed to the community or not. And if they're not, they say so. And that's their responsibility, not the community's responsibility necessarily.
May I ask, how many of the people are in rebellion against what they've known up to now? Because Camus, who I'm going to do here, says, to rebel is to live. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how many people you have who've never been in a church, never, mm-hmm. or who've been in a church and left, and they come into your community, and again they leave. Do you have any of the restless ones?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We've had those. Yeah. A lot of the people who are in the community now are people who have rebelled.
Yeah.
From all kinds of denominations, not Lutheran, but... say some of our, the rebels are, they come from all over. And we've had people who have flowed through the community. We'd be involved with it for 6 months or something like that. That was one reason why we saw that we needed to have structure. Because you didn't know who you could trust for what. They looked committed, but they could just disappear the next Sunday. They would never come back. And so we try to confront ourselves and one another with a commitment. Yeah, that's true. There's that aspect of it. Yeah.
You mentioned you have a discipline of outward mission. How do you pursue that discipline?
Okay, that's also difficult. We first of all had in our heads a notion that there could be some one corporate mission that the community would really be doing. Well, we have actually right now, I think, two missions that are spawned by our community that people are doing, but not everybody in the community is involved in them. So, in fact, you're raising a question about something with which we are struggling right at the present time. It's a funny thing when you start a church and you don't have any building and you don't have all the costs that go with that and you don't have a pastor's salary and you don't have... very, very few fixed costs. Okay, so then you've got to start committing your time and your money to what? Well, you can define what it is. And one of the things we've done is we've opened a place in a little business node near the downtown area of Kalamazoo that's called the Eighth Day. And ostensibly it's a bookstore. But we wrote a theology of the Eighth Day before we opened it. So we said that was kind of like a navigational star. We were going to set on paper before we ever opened the doors what it is we're trying to do here. And then as we progress year after year, we can always take a fix off this theology that we've read and see if we're still on course. I think we are pretty well. It's a people kind of place. It's viewed in a lot of different ways by different people, depending on what their needs are. But we do all kinds of things in the Eighth Day besides sell books. And provide some really good resources for that area of the country that are not obtainable, but do counseling, do almost sometimes hospitality. I mean, whatever the need walks through the door, you take care of it. And so we're pretty nonchalant about the bookstore business. If I have to lock it, shut the door and put the clothes sign out to take care of somebody, I can do that. So that's one ministry that some people are involved in. And then just about a year ago, 6 months ago, we opened also a thing which we've called the One World Shop. It's third world handcrafted things that would be sold in the store on a nonprofit basis that helps out some third world people with some economic things, but also then becomes an instrument of education in Kalamazoo for people about third world things. Those are two things that are ministries of the community as such. But then there are a lot of people who have jobs or working here and there, and it's really hard for them to be deeply involved in that kind of thing. So we've struggled about the person's work, whatever it might be, as a mission, as a ministry, an outward ministry. Like Nancy's a physical therapist, and I think that we've come to see ministry. You know, she's an individual. So how we support, and if we support, and so forth, and give some kind of a Christian base out of which she can, in a sense, singly then go and work as a physical therapist with handicapped children. Does that answer your question at all?
I'm interested in how you might reach consensus about someone joining the community. It might be a little different in a communal living situation. It'd be a little more serious than a more kind of corporate thing, but where you can live in your own houses, that kind of thing. Is it anyone who wants in is in, who accepts the disciplines, or do the other people have to reach some kind of conviction that this person needs to be in there? Or, you know what I mean? It's like it seems like you need a certain core of people who are committed to the idea and aren't just trying it out or just...
Normally a person would be involved with a community for a year before they would, quote, join. So by that time they might look to an outsider already like a member. And there is a lot of discernment goes on in that process. We wouldn't reject anybody as long as they would have to have at least a basic agreement of what the community was about. In other words, I don't think someone would want to join who says, I don't think Jesus is Lord. I reject that notion. Well, I don't think they want to join the community. As far as the disciplines are concerned, what you're getting at, it gets into a lot of detail to talk about how it works out. In a sense, we have a graduated experience of the disciplines. I didn't want to spell it out too much because it'd take a while, but one can take all the six disciplines and commit yourself to them at a lower level of involvement. Okay, and if that feels good and you're growing, that seems like that's helping people grow, then they may decide, okay, I'll make a greater commitment to these disciplines. Understand? That's kind of how we're working with it right now. It may not be how we work with it 3 months from now.
It sounds like the journey of your community is almost a New Testament journey. You start out as people with a commitment to Jesus is Lord. Mm-hmm. And then the next question is, what does that mean? You know, Jesus is Lord. And then the next question is, how do we know that these people are committed to that Jesus is Lord? And then the next thing is, what disciplines are involved for people who proclaim Jesus is Lord? It seems to me that's the exact struggle of the whole New Testament. And it's a terrific struggle. Christian church has been through that struggle, except that it has sort of made idols out of the answers.
Yeah.
You know, now, what do you do to keep that from happening in your community?
Okay.
You know, is there
one thing that I've said over and over again, and whether the people of the community hear it or not, I don't know, but I think they do. we basically only have two, there are two questions around which we keep struggling. One is, what does it mean to say Jesus is Lord in 1982? What does it mean to say Jesus is Lord? So that's one thing. Whether Jesus is Lord or not, it is not up for vote in our community. We don't, that's something we, that's a given, okay? The other one is, what does it mean to be a community of followers of this one who says Jesus is Lord? Those are two questions. Everything else is up for grabs. And anybody in the community could come in and say, I just think that let's just squash all these things that we're doing right now. I think this is a better way to go about it. And we could start and struggle with it for 2 months and figure out, you know, that's a tough question you're answering. It's probably inevitable that any group eventually becomes institutionalized, you know. But you always got, part of it is having new people coming in. Part of it is being ecumenical. I think that's been an important aspect of our community. That is, now if I go to a group, and to some degree, Holden Village is like this, although not as bad as some of the groups I go to. I am shocked to hear all the Lutheran talk, because I'm not used to it anymore. I used to be used to it, but I'm not so used to it. And if I go to a meeting where it's like some Lutheran something or other, I'm really shocked to hear just Luther, Luther, Lutheran, 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 like there wasn't anything else. And I'm not saying that's a criticism, I'm just saying as an observation. And in our community, we have people who, like we have an ex-Methodist minister who's not serving any parish now, he's doing counseling, but he doesn't talk a whole lot about his Methodist background and stuff like that. But I think everybody kind of brings something of their tradition. The best example I could give is we have one family that's Mennonite, and they are consciously Mennonite, and they want to stay connected with the Mennonite church, the larger Mennonite church. There just doesn't happen to be a Mennonite parish in Kalamazoo. They joined with us because they said this was the most biblically oriented church they could find, and Mennonite's pretty biblical. But they bring their tradition into the community, and they will share it very openly. So that's a corrective too. You know, if I get stuck in something that's too Lutheran, Russ Smucker will shake me up, you know, and have me look at something from a different point of view. It's a perennial problem, I guess.
It all sounds pretty adult so far. Where do the children fit in?
Well, when I say we have 35 members, people ask how many people we have. 35. That includes from babies on up. And kids participate in the worship. It's in the living room. So it's quite informal. And they have an opportunity, I think, just in the very setting of the worship itself. We don't use LBW, for example. We write our own liturgy and stuff. We've experimented with various educational models for kids, Sunday school type thing, you know. Never has worked too well. Right now we're going more on the assumption that it's the family's responsibility primarily to bring the faith along in their own children. And the idea is to give support to the families. And to do that. And families that have children of similar ages will link together and get together at one another's homes for, quote, like a Sunday school thing sometime during the week. Maybe you can ask questions of Nancy. Maybe she can answer better than I can. I think children are fairly well incorporated into the whole thing. We meet on Wednesday nights also, and that's an adult thing. But everything else we do virtually includes the children, whether it's picnics or camping together or retreating together or parties or potlucks. Those things are really important too.
How about newborns, babies?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't have a lot of them because we don't have that many people. But last year I baptized 6 children that ranged in age from was the youngest one, several months old, on up to about eight. There was one family that had three kids who joined with us about 2 years ago, and none of their children were baptized. That's worked out real well too. It's surprising how little problem you have with an ecumenical group.